Hello there. Today is Thursday, June 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, U.S. leaders warn of more attacks like the one in Istanbul's busiest airport.
How are we alive? Like, you know, if the flight was delayed 2 hours, we would have been exactly in that spot.
President Obama and the leaders of Canada and Mexico defend free trade and reject protectionist rhetoric. EU leaders make it clear Britain should not expect special treatment. A preview of a new film, Captain Fantastic, and also ahead, why the sound of silence might be getting louder. It's all on today's International Edition. Airport crews have swept up broken ceiling tiles and shattered glass as heavily armed police officers continue to patrol terminals at Istanbul's Atatürk Airport. It was an attack that echoed the carnage earlier this year at the Brussels airport, down to the taxi that carried the men to their target, inciting panic and then taking lethal advantage. Three suicide attackers unleashed a deadly tide of bullets and bombs at Istanbul's airport, leaving 42 dead and 239 more wounded. Airport surveillance video showed panicked travelers stampeding down a corridor, looking fearfully over their shoulders.
I can't even fly anymore. I'm like so scared. So everybody in the flight the same way. I mean, it's just disbelief. I mean, we're so lucky we got away with it, it looks like.
A coordinated assault on one of the world's busiest airports and on a key NATO ally that plays a crucial role in the fight against the Islamic extremist group. We are joined by Professor Amin Saikal, director of the Center for Arab Islamic Studies at the Australian National University. So, Professor, authorities so far seem to suspect the Islamic State is responsible for Tuesday's bloodbath.
Turkey has quite a number of people who are opposed to the Turkish rule. We also have the Kurds who have serious grievances, and particularly the militant organization PKK precisely may have been behind this. But it seems that probably from all the reports that we've received, it might be really the work of the Islamic State, although the Islamic State has not really claimed responsibility for it yet.
Wouldn't they want to claim responsibility?
Well, I think they would have, because in the past they have, but so far they have remained totally silent. And that indicates that either they don't want to be revealed as the source at this particular point, or they may have not been really behind this whole thing. I mean, we know that there have been something like about 7 major bomb blasts or suicide attacks in Turkey, and particularly in Istanbul and the urban areas over the last many months. Not all of them have been carried out by the Islamic State, but contention on the part of certain intelligence services at the moment is that because of the nature of this operation at Istanbul Airport and because of the size of it and the way it has been conducted, suspicion has really fallen on the Islamic State. But strangely enough, Islamic State has not so far really claimed this incident.
It really does seem like there is a general rise in terrorism, particularly across the Middle East.
Well, I mean, it is true that it is across the Middle East, and Turkey had in the past been relatively very stable. Turkey is a very important state located between Europe and Asia, and at the same time, it is a very important member of the North Atlantic Organization. But at the same time, we see that there has been downward slide on all fronts Turkey had once really enjoyed. On the political front, President Erdogan is facing serious domestic problems. There's been a split within its ruling Justice and Development Party. And beyond that, of course, the Syrian crisis has had an enormous impact on Turkey, not only in terms of the outflow of refugees, which have caused a major burden on the Turkish resources and so on, but also now that Turkey, or until very recently, Turkey joined the international coalition, which is led by the United States, against IS, and that has also made Turkey a target for the Islamic State. And at the same time, the conflict between the Turkish government and the militant groups among the Kurds has been reignited, and the PKK has once again become very active in terms of the militant operations that it's undertaken.
The CIA chief in the U.S. said after the attack that the Islamic State group is likely planning a similar attack on the United States. Do you agree?
I think it's possible, simply because the Islamic State is now in a somewhat desperate position and would like to really hit targets as widely as possible. And the United States is never really off the list of the Islamic State. But at the same time, we know that the reach of the Islamic State as far as the United States is somewhat more difficult than perhaps the capability that it has in terms of carrying out operations in the neighboring states and the region, that is particularly Jordan, as well as Europe.
Do you think it's inevitable that another attack like this, though, in another major airport will happen?
That is always a possibility, and one should really expect some of these militant groups to engage in those sort of activities, whether it's going to be another major airport or another major public venue, which could allow them to cause as much casualties as possible so that they can get as much publicity as possible. And I think they usually try to really target areas which could bring them a lot of international publicity. In terms of their impact, they may not really bring any government down, or for that matter, destroy a society, but certainly in terms of the international attraction that these sort of incidents attract.
Realistically speaking, is it even possible to wipe out a group like the Islamic State? Do they just continue to move when they get pushed out of one area?
I think it's very difficult, simply because the Islamic State, like Al-Qaeda and some of the other militant organizations, have been able to sort of franchise their operations. And when they come under enormous pressure in one area, they have the capacity to either to export their operations to other areas and their militants to other areas, or inspire people in other areas of the world to cooperate with them or to sympathize with them. I personally think that the current operations is going to be very difficult, simply because IS is a symptom of much deeper problems across the region. And as long as the conditions which have been given rise to the militant group like IS are not addressed, then there's always a possibility that even if IS is defeated, there will be another group emerging in order to replace it. The only way that issue could be really resolved is through a comprehensive political strategy to address those root causes which defy military solutions. And at the moment, we just simply do not have that sort of strategy in place.
Here are some of the other stories we're following at voanews.com. Clinton leads Trump, but many voters don't like either. Obama and the U.S. get high marks around the world in a Pew survey. Nigerians sort through ruins left by Boko Haram. International courts have ruled in July on South China Sea dispute. And a fire painting artist burns his art. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. With tensions growing over terrorism and fallout from Britain's exit from the European Union, President Obama acknowledges that Americans and others have reason to be concerned about their own future in a rapidly globalizing economy. But the president and leaders of Mexico and Canada, who just wrapped up the North American Leaders Summit in Ottawa on Wednesday, strongly rejecting a wave of trade protectionism and anti-globalism.
We're going to continue to deepen our trilateral cooperation in this hemisphere and around the world. And in short, we're going to do more to speak with one united North American voice on the world stage.
VOA White House correspondent Cindy Sain joins me now. Cindy, the three leaders speaking at this news conference Wednesday following the summit seem to really be unified, even as reporters try to inject U.S. presidential politics into the conversation.
Yes, that's right, Laurie. And you're right that the three are so friendly, and they kept expressing their high regard for each other, and that some have dubbed it the Three Amigos Summit. But the fireworks came that all three strongly rejected the current wave of protectionism and anti-globalization. We may have seen with the UK's vote to leave the European Union, and President Obama, without mentioning the Republican likely nominee by name, Donald Trump, did go on what he himself admitted was a bit of a rant, saying, you know, I don't think this is populism when someone has demonstrated no regard for workers or for ordinary people, and someone who is espousing anti-immigrant and protectionist policies, which are not good for the country.
And did the other leaders chime in as well?
Well, they were very careful. They were asked several times questions about Trump. And both Mexican President Peña Nieto and Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau went out of their way to say they would respect the outcome of the U.S. elections, respect the will of the people, and they would work with whomever is elected. But they both praised President Obama, and they both said that they support free trade, they support a global outlook, and they support the friendly cooperation that's been the hallmark of relations.
Right. The whole theme of the Trump campaign seems to be America first and not keen on a lot of these trade deals, including the TPP. Did they talk about trade at all?
Yes, they did. They talked a lot about trade, and they talked about how that their citizens greatly benefited from trade. And President Obama did say he understands that people have concerns. These are legitimate. But he said the prescription of withdrawing from free trade agreements is not the right way to go.
The reporters were very focused on asking the three leaders about the U.S. presidential election and asking if they talked about it and asking if this comes up and what their concerns are. Did that seem to really sort of capitalize the press conference?
Yes, it did. And the Mexican president was asked if he was worried that he would have a big wall on his border next year. And he said that he would respect the outcome of the U.S. election, but he did say that some politicians turn to populism and turn to simple solutions when there are problems. And he says that, you know, that has never leads to good results. So that was an indirect slam on Trump without mentioning him by name.
And that's probably when the president chimed in about with his populism comment?
Yes, and that's when President Obama said he did want to say that, reject the idea that some of the rhetoric that we've been hearing from people who have been popping up is populism. He said, when someone has not shown any regard for American workers, and that this is not populism, but that this is nativism, xenophobia, or worse. Or he said maybe it's just cynicism to win votes.
All right. We appreciated VOA White House correspondent Cindy Sain. Well, European leaders are focusing on carving out a future without Britain. They wrapped up a summit in Brussels Wednesday that's likely the last for British Prime Minister David Cameron. Speaking after the talks, he said, despite sadness and regret, the meeting was constructive.
Britain should seek, and Europe should seek, the closest possible relations as Britain leaves the EU, close relations over trade, over cooperation, over security.
And Donald Tusk, president of the European Council, said it was a calm and serious discussion and that leaders are determined to remain united.
We also discussed the fact that there are too many people in Europe who are unhappy with the current state of affairs and who expect us to do better. Many recalled that for decades Europe was bringing hope and that we have a responsibility to return to that.
Well, Britain's ambassador to the United Nations says his country's seat on the Security Council has become even more important after the British referendum. This is International Edition on VOA. Well, taking a look at what's trending online, social media correspondent Michael Lippin is with us. Hi, Michael. What's the talk of Twitter today?
Hi, Laurie. Well, the first one is the most successful Olympian of all time, American swimmer Michael Phelps. He became one of the top trending topics on Twitter today, thanks to qualifying for his fifth straight Olympic Games, making him the first American male swimmer to do so. Phelps earned his ticket to the upcoming Rio Games by winning a 200-meter butterfly event at the U.S. Olympic swimming trials on Wednesday. The 31-year-old has an incredible 22 Olympic medals to his name, 18 of them gold, and some sports commentators expect him to add to that in Rio.
So what have people been posting about Phelps?
Well, you know, when you search for his name, you can see a photo of his reaction to winning the 200-meter butterfly, raising one of his hands out of the water and showing all five fingers, his way of saying, yeah, I'm going to my fifth Olympics. As for tweets, user Harrison Collier wrote, Michael Phelps is so fun to watch. Five Olympics, can't wait to watch him in Rio. Phelps has been a sports icon in the United States for many years, which is unusual considering that he's in the swimming business, which is not one of the most lucrative sports in America. So, you know, Phelps transcended that limitation to become just as well known to Americans as athletes in sports like football and basketball.
And apparently we're about to hear the sound of silence.
Oh boy, yes. The sound of silence from an American celebrity. His name is Paul Simon. This is a musical artist who's been around for much longer than Phelps. Paul Simon is actually 74 years old and one of America's most acclaimed singer-songwriters. He did write that song, The Sound of Silence, as you were saying. Paul Simon has been active in the business for 61 years, you know, since he was 13 years old. And now he's telling the New York Times newspaper that he is ready to give up making and playing music. The actual quote that he gave to the paper was, "Showbiz doesn't hold any interest for me, none." You know, it's a story that quickly started trending on Facebook.
Wow, how are people reacting?
You know, I think it's a mixture of some sadness as well as understanding that Simon is coming to the end of a super long career. Facebook user Matthew Stafford captured a popular sentiment. He said, "As sad as it is to hear the possibility of this, in all honesty, if the man slash legend that is Paul Simon does retire, he's doing so after giving our hearts and ears literally decades on decades of some of the most amazing music I've had the pleasure of listening to." Simon is actually finishing up a North American tour this week to promote his new album, Stranger to Stranger, and it looks like it could be his last. Lori?
All right, Michael, thank you so much. You can follow him at Michael_Lippin. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. You're listening to
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA. Let's keep it in Hollywood. Actors Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck are back together for a fundraising effort to help residents of her home state of West Virginia, which has been pounded by historic flooding on recently. We are joined by Entertainment Tonight senior news editor Jennifer Peros. This is, Jennifer, also the one-year anniversary of the couple's announcement that they'd split up.
everybody was shocked when they did announce their split last summer. It was the Friday before a big holiday weekend, so they did it to kind of stay under the radar and hoping people wouldn't remember and kind of forget about it with the holiday weekend, but of course that didn't happen. But yeah, of course, one of Hollywood's most famous couples of all time ended their marriage 1 year ago today. But, you know, sources close to them are telling ET that, you know, they're still good friends. They have a great relationship. They co-parent their children together. They actually live on the same property lot in Los Angeles. They live in two separate houses, but they do live on the same plot, so the kids can kind of walk from house to house without having to go outside. They have not officially filed paperwork for a divorce. They don't know when they're going to do that. So they are on good terms, despite what the public thinks. But yeah, this is one of the few Hollywood couples, unlike, you know, a Sean Penn and a Amber Heard, who are actually getting along and trying to make it work as parents.
I wonder if they'll get back together.
That's what everyone's asking, because the divorce papers have not been filed. They have been spending a lot of time together recently in Europe, especially in London, where Ben's been shooting his last movie. But, you know, sources tell us, no, there are no plans for them to reconcile romantically anytime soon. But, you know, this is the best situation that we could have hoped for, because nobody can forget that famous scandal that hit last summer when Ben was accused of cheating on Jen with their nanny. So despite all the things that did happen, this definitely is the best case scenario.
There is a big romance apparently blooming with a very big pop star and an actor. What's going on?
Taylor Swift and Tom Hiddleston, they've pretty much taken over the entertainment news headlines this past week. I mean, everybody was really, really shocked when Taylor announced her split with world-famous DJ Calvin Harris, and it just took 2 weeks to get her to get pictures of her dating Tom Hiddleston, of course, the very famous British actor, and they flew to Nashville last Thursday to meet her parents. They hopped on her private plane, flew to London to meet his mother,
Whoa.
And then straight from London, they have been in Rome since last night, kind of on this romantic whirlwind trip. And of course, everybody knows Taylor. She has had a few last famous boyfriends, but Tom has been always this very private actor, British actor, who really has kept his personal, especially dating life, out of the spotlight. So, yeah. He's not holding back this time. Everyone's seeing this. And, you know, now everyone is starting to wonder whether this is a publicity stunt. You know, there's rumors out there that Tom Hiddleston is gunning to be the next Bond. So we're just kind of waiting to see how long this does last.
Well, maybe this will be the one for her.
Hopefully. Who knows? But I definitely think that we're going to get a couple of songs. Whether it does work out or it doesn't work out, we're definitely going to get some songs out of this relationship.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Oh, yeah.
And since we're on the topic of romance, sounds like there are some celebrity weddings coming up this weekend.
Yeah, you know, of course, July 4th weekend, we have confirmed that famous New York Yankee baseball player Derek Jeter is getting married this weekend to famous Sports Illustrated model Hannah Davis. They're actually getting married in a vineyard out in Napa Valley, California. And we are hearing that Kylie Minogue is tying the knot this weekend with her boyfriend of just 6 months. They are reportedly getting married in Rome, Italy. It's two big weddings to be really excited for. Really beautiful pictures.
All right. We appreciate it. Entertainment Tonight senior news editor Jennifer Perros. Well, a new film starring Oscar nominees Viggo Mortensen and Frank Langella looks at the struggle between values and what's best for a family. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, Captain Fantastic has Mortensen playing a father who has to struggle with his idea of what it means to be a parent.
What we created here may be unique in all of human existence.
All the way to top.
We created a paradise.
Ben is a free spirit, a counterculture rebel who lives with his wife and six children in the woods in Washington State. He is rearing the kids with a rigorous intellectual and physical regimen, but he wants to turn them into bright, respectful adults. However, he has also kept them away from life outside their bohemian existence. That all changes when Ben's wife, Leslie, who has to be hospitalized for depression, commits suicide. Ben and the children want to attend her funeral, but her father, Jack, played by Frank Langella, refuses to allow it. Ben then faces a confrontation with Jack, and the kids experience a world they have never known. At the film's premiere in Los Angeles, Viggo Mortensen said that the movie explores not only what it means to be a parent, but also what defines a good parent.
I think it's always been hard. I don't think it's harder now than ever. I think it's always a question of what kind of parent you want to be. Do you want to be the kind of parent that says no because I said so, or do you want to be the kind of parent that says maybe not and let me explain why? And if you have a counter argument, I'm willing to listen. That way is harder. It takes more time and energy, but it's worth it.
Captain Fantastic debuted at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year to great acclaim. It went on to win a directing prize of the Un Certain Regard section at Cannes for Matt Ross. Ross says that this film did have unique challenges, but he was pleased with the end product.
Every movie is difficult, and it's amazing that any movie is ever made. The particular logistical challenges in this movie were that there's six kids in every scene, there's two musical numbers, two stunts, both of which involve children. We're a road movie, so we're different locations every single day.
Annalise Basso plays Ben's daughter, Vesper. She says the cast had to go through an outdoor boot camp to prepare for the film.
That was my first time really camping because we built our own shelter. And that I would say, is the craziest experience for me, just because it was totally nothing. All we had were sleeping bags, and we scavenged berries and plants from the woods, and for dinner that night we had that, and also someone brought salmon.
Captain Fantastic also stars Samantha Isler as Ben's daughter Keeler, and English actor George McKay as his son Bodovan. Captain Fantastic is rated R for language and brief nudity. It is set for release in the United States July 8th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. We will be back tomorrow, same time and same place. Find us anytime at voanews.com or on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Follow me at Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us. And thank you so much to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Zimbabwean communities in the Yanga district will be able to construct facilities to dramatically improve their health and sanitation, thanks to assistance from the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, and its Community Water Supply, Sanitation, Hygiene, and Natural Resources Management, also known as CWASH program. In early June, at the Ruronquo District Development Fund Rest Camp, Robert Shawatama, the Provincial Water and Sanitation Subcommittee Chairperson for Manicaland, officially handed over to the people of Nyanga District $40,000 in materials to construct or rehabilitate 83 boreholes, 45 pumps to extract water, 105 drinking troughs for animals, and 102 latrines. Chairperson Chawatama also presided over the graduation of 18 community latrine and water pan builders and 16 village pump mechanics, who had been trained by Development Aid from People to People, or DAP Zimbabwe, with funding from USAID. With guidance from the District Development Fund, these builders and mechanics will assist the communities in constructing and repairing their water infrastructure and ensure long-term sustainability. In total, USAID's CWASH activities will provide safe and clean water to 2,400 households and 6 schools in the district. The communities of Nyanga North have long grappled with access to safe and clean water due to frequent breakdowns of boreholes. Some families travel for 10 kilometers to access safe water, while others sleep queuing for water at the boreholes. Many boreholes in the district are being chained and locked as communities try to safeguard limited water resources. Others have introduced strict water rationing, with households only allowed to collect 2 20-liter buckets per day, regardless of the household size. USAID is proud to support Nyanga District to improve access to safe, potable water, said USAID Zimbabwe Acting Mission Director Bruce Abrams. With this newly acquired technical expertise and building materials, these communities are now able to protect themselves against waterborne diseases.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For what's your